you know, the free version of all these products, they promise you no data security whatsoever. If you want to just, if you want them to just merely promise they won't use your data to train their models, you have to pay.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solonauts. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. We have a special guest today. We have Jonathan Aberman. So he is the CEO and co-founder of Upside. So Jonathan, thank you so much for having me. Really excited to have this conversation. How are you?
Really glad you have me, and I'm looking forward to it too. It's always good to talk with a co-venture, and I suspect you are, so it should be fun.
Yes, it is. It is. So for the audience coming through, tell us a little bit about what Upside is, what's the goal of it, and you know how that all come together.
I've been in the venture capital industry for about 25 years, and I've also been in education as well. And I've done a lot of software deals over the years as an investor and advisor, and a lot of them have been around AI. And one of the things that really was concerning me as an educator and also just as somebody who cares about society was the way that AI basically was going to make it much harder for us to figure out what humans are going to do. And as you know, that's very much a dominant theme of AI. It's substitution for human labor. And about a year ago, I found a couple of scientists at a couple of local universities who had developed the first ever objective way to measure what humans are doing that AI is not. And I got really excited about that. And the more that I talked with them about it, I realized that we could create a product that would allow you to see how a particular person performed a task, a creativity task, differently from an AI. And then you could also figure out what their particular approach to originality was. It's very powerful. So decided to stop investing and become the founder of the company. So I took the technology and put a company together with a couple of other experienced business people like me and the scientist. And we formed Upside we formed in January, but really started going in earnest building the product about 8 months or so ago. And what we do is we have the first ever originality infrastructure where an education institution, an employer, anybody can ask a bunch of people to play really simple creativity games. And we're able to extract from those games how that person performed that task compared to AI, all the large language models, how much originality they have, and also how they approach originality. So for example, you know, some people are very expansive. They are always thinking about new stuff, right? We call those expanders. They're about 10% of the population, roughly. And then there's another group that are focal. They just get up every day just to make things happen. That's about 30%. And in between are people that augment what the focals do, people that connect what the expanders do. And it's very interesting, you know, because what we learned is that everybody has the capability to be original in how we think. And because it's a human trait, we seek safety and we seek novelty. That's how we're wired. I don't think that before we introduced this product, there was ever really a way to quantify in an objective way how somebody actually uses their originality. So we think it's very important. Our customers think it's important because now you can give people AI and you can actually match it up with how they want to approach their originality and use AI as a tool instead of a substitute. So it's very powerful and we're really excited about it, frankly.
Yeah, it is, because it really goes off of more on the personas. Is that correct? Of like,
yeah, absolutely.
For the folks that are going in. So, you know, when you, it's so fascinating to the point of it. So do you think that, what is the most surprising, that's so many questions, but on this, what has been the most surprising thing you've learned so far about like how people have expressed originality in business terms from the expander and from the different personas?
So it's one thing that's very interesting to me is that originality is an output measurement, meaning that we don't really measure. We don't care whether you get it from being inherently creative or you get it from using AI well, or whether you just have an inspiration from above. It doesn't really matter. What matters is objective outcome. And that's been very interesting, because to this point, everybody who's always talked about how do humans measure always focuses on creativity. And then people get wrapped around their axle like, oh, geez, I'm not creative like Liberace or Leonardo da Vinci. And the best analogy I give you is that I'm a musician, I'm a guitarist. I grew up playing the guitar, still play the guitar. And, you know, if you look at somebody like Eddie Van Halen or Jimi Hendrix, they were unbelievable guitarists. They never took lessons in their lives. They were just incredibly original, incredibly creative. But if you go to any bar in Nashville, you'll hear a guy you've never heard of and never see again. They can play every note perfectly. They're also creative, but it's a different kind of creativity. It's vocal creativity. And so the biggest change, I think, has been helping people understand that unlike an IQ test, which is somehow seemed as determinative of, you know, you have it and you did it once and it's done. Original intelligence is, first of all, it's something that is not a destiny thing. You can change your original intelligence by trying harder to think more expansively or using AI. So it's a way to actually improve yourself. And that's probably been the biggest thing as I talk with people is, now, if you didn't get an expander score, that doesn't mean you didn't get a good score. What that means is that your personality is different and you use originality differently. And it opens people's eyes. That's the first thing. The second thing, which really is fun, is we have a version that you can play on the website called the LAQ Challenge. Anybody can actually go online and try it out for themselves. Whenever I go to trade fairs or events, we always set up a booth and let people play. It takes 5 minutes. How often people step away and say, my God, I just answered a goofy question like, what would I do if I met a talking cow? And the personality attribute, the personality that surfaced, how did you know that was me? You know? And I think that's the part that's just a lot of fun. This is just, you know, this is a mission business where we're very much trying to change narrative around AI and the role of humans by giving an objective measurement for the first time. But I got to be honest with you, ask me what's most surprising. I think the thing that's most surprising is how much fun it is. You know what I mean? It's just, I started out with my team to make a difference, but it's a much more positive and fun experience than I think even I imagined it could be.
Right. And I, you know, I'm thinking of it, Jonathan, is just on the capability of, because we always want to know like what, you know, sometimes we don't know what we're good at. Sometimes we don't know where our strengths lie. Some, you know, little bits and pieces, but I can see just with the AI, just helping with it, that bringing that originality of even thinking from the education side, from a student and so forth else of, like, you know, not knowing, even for me, you know, I might be a visual learner, but I learn by giving scenarios, giving, you know, kinetic, like real, you know, in the moment type of thing. So I can imagine just with Upside, with that creativity tool, isn't it fair to say like you can really add on to it to help somebody become learning their ups and downs, those personas, and help to, you know, enhance that. Is that fair to say?
Very fair to say. And in fact, we're doing additional research right now at the universities that we're associated with, where we are giving them input and access to, you know, here's how you approach, you know, originality. And now go off and use the AI and let's see how it changes. And okay, so you changed a bit, you know, how can we change it more? In other words, I think that the big thing right now is that the dominant storyline around AI is it's here to take everybody's jobs. And that, I think, is for a few very important reasons. The first one is the most obvious use case right now for AI on its own, because the way it's structured with structural homogeneity and similarity of output, is really repetitive tasks of greater and greater complexity. You know, AI is basically just machine learning and statistics. And so it is best as an efficiency tool. And that's the way businesses are deploying it right now, as a labor substitution, the way they would apply to any other technology tool. But the difference is that unlike, say, a computer or a calculator or the wheel, which, you know, has the effect of substituting for labor in some way, right? AI, actually, if you use it as an assistant and you drive it and you're skeptical and you dialogue with it, it actually makes you better at your higher level reasoning. But if you use it badly, it makes you stupider, demonstrably. And so none of that's, in my opinion, none of that is being discussed at the same level in our society as the, oh, AI is going to do everything. I mean, you look at what's happened to the stock market. Everybody's like, oh my God, AI is going to take away everything. And the answer is, well, if we allow it to. So, you know, to me, the biggest thing, you know, we talked about earlier, one of the things that's really fun is to see people almost be relieved when they look at their performance vis-a-vis an AI answering the same question. And it's like, wow, I outperformed the AI. People are almost afraid to find out. And, you know, most people outperform. And the ones that don't, it should be a wake-up call. But, you know, I think people are afraid of AI. And I think the way it's being deployed is making it worse, not better.
Right. Yeah. I think so too, because it's kind of funny you mentioned, because, you know, we're kind of a technology partner of Solanox. So we kind of, the biggest thing of where clients and so forth is they want AI, but how I'm thinking of it in terms of like an enterprise level, what is the change management? So when we input this in, what is the change management level going to, how are people going to, you know, fit in with AI? What's the adoption going to look like? So to your point of it, of, you know, folks usually on a worker and everything, they want to use it to make their job a little bit easier, as you said, repetitive tasks and so forth. But, and this is how I utilize it, and this how others, it's that companion. You still need that. I like to use the AI as an enhancer, make you think more of that strategic level, whatever in role that it is, to make you further more, rather than, you know, just doing that. If you're just thinking it from an entry level and just as a task, to your point, and I see it as well, that is where the fear is. But how you utilize it, brainstorm, giving different ideas to make you think of different capabilities, scenarios based off the personas of it. So it makes you, like, in my words, take away the veil to start thinking much higher. How does this affect? Where can I input my job? And where am I thinking on a business whole? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Well, you hit the nail on the head. So I'm a change management guy. I'm a venture investor. I'm a university professor. I've been around organizational change. I've led change. Every entrepreneur I know that's been successful built a product to solve a problem they had. So I built, you know, so basically when I used that experience from a change management perspective, the product comprehensively, it measures what somebody's originality competency is, their personality type for how they approach it, but also their organizational constraints. How much autonomy they have in their role, self-reported, or how much autonomy they feel they have. And when you layer those four metrics together, OIQ, OIQ type, role value intensity, personal value intensity, somebody can literally look at you or me in an organization and say, all right, I got somebody in a role where they got a lot of originality competency and they have no autonomy. I'm leaving money on the table. Or I've got somebody in a role that's got a lot of autonomy and very little originality. They are a work slop ready to happen. So immediately, you can now do governance in a targeted way. You can do risk management in a targeted way. You can do team building in a targeted way. You can do training in a targeted way. And when you cut through it all, and this is why I reject the current adoption model that's being promulgated. I'm not surprised the ROI is so little, is because it's not being approached as a change management exercise. It's Hunger Games. Here are the tools. Figure it out. Change managers, and you know this because you was talking about change managers, look at who my early adopters are, who my laggards are, who, and the battlefield in between, and what do I have to do to tell them the story, to bring them along and promulgate best practices. And what this tool does, what this platform does, is if an employee answers three games, literally three games, 20 minutes, all that data comes into the company and the CEO and everybody can make tactical decisions and make sure that ROI comes out of an AI adoption. It's huge. I mean, it's got huge potential. It really does.
It is. It really is. Because you start thinking of it. I don't know if it's just the how good the marketing has been from the LLM, from the providers and so forth, the AI. But you hear this thing of the technology is driving the business versus the other way around. So to your point, you have to think of, there's so many components of what's the actual use case that we want AI to focus on, to improve upon? What's an actual, let's just keep it siloed. And then we go from there. We look at what are the, as you said, the governance. I love on the governance side, because we focus more on cloud as architect. And so AI is built off of the cloud. So we have to look at FinOps. So find, like, for your costs of the tokens and so forth, else to make it your scalability. You have to look at the security of it, making sure that the prompt, there's no prompt injections. There's no anybody hackers trying to get that data from that side. The governance piece of the guardrail. So, and then the change management, as you were speaking before. So there's so many steps to it, as we're both on the same page to that, John, on that.
Very interesting is that, again, you know, it's fascinating to me, having been in software technology is in different ways for over 30 years now, everything's new is old. And a lot of what you and I are just describing, you know, what I think you call ghost AI. Right. Yes. Within an organization, you've got the AI implementation, you've got the ghost AI, where you got the people that are using it in ways they shouldn't. That's no different from when you had intruder and insider threats in cybersecurity. There's always an element of human dynamics and human engineering in any successful cybersecurity deployment. And what's lacking right now is a successful human AI roadmap. Understanding that different people are different risks, because you're exactly right. I mean, we're seeing this already with a lot of the AI startups that use external models. And ours don't, by the way. Our models are our own, so we don't have a token expense when we run our business, which is really cool. But a lot of these tools are getting introduced in these companies. The unspoken expense, the tokens, is never discussed, right? And all of a sudden, you start to use it. It starts to scale. Even if people use it normally, all of a sudden the enterprise has got expenses it didn't expect. But if it's made worse because you got some knucklehead who's not even knucklehead, just trying to, oh, I got to try Claude, I got to try Chat, I got a Gemini, I got to do a Bake Off. You know, they're running, you know, a Perplexity. They're doing 15 searches at once, and all of a sudden you've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of token expense. It's a disaster.
There's no standardization, right? To it. There's no standardization.
No.
Anything.
No, but listen. The fundamental issue, I think, is that, so I've been part of in and out of the Valley all my career. Nobody falls in love with technology like Silicon Valley. I mean, it started with Hewlett Packard. It's the engineering first culture. So if you're talking about the deployment of a new technology, anytime, the enthusiasm is going to be about all the great things you can do in itself. This is the nature of it. But if you layer on top of that the winner-take-all aspects of the LLM race that's going on, there's no doubt that if Claude, you know, Anthropic or Grok or, you know, whoever wins, they become the dominant provider of knowledge in our society, which has huge rent-seeking potential. So there's a reason why these companies have multi-hundred billion dollar valuations. It's the presumption that they're going to become the intermediaries of truth and fact.
Pretty much so.
So it's just a natural progression of the system that we live in. But for me, it really comes down to, at the end of it, society is still human beings. And we have choices that we could make. And we don't have to throw up our hands and say, all that matters is technology. Right. And it's bottom. The reason why we start Upside is I got tired of people talking with me as an educator or elsewhere about, yeah, if you want to talk about the effect on students and people, that's a social problem. This is a business issue. Well, guess what? In a world where AI commoditizes everything and makes it efficient, where's value add going to come from in business? Differentiation. Where's differentiation come from? Humans. So what we now do for the first time is I can have a conversation about what's best for business. You're smart people with AI. You're going to be more profitable than the chucklehead over here that just uses AI without humans.
Yes.
So now we've leveled the playing field. So I'm funnily enough, I'm a venture capitalist trying to solve a market problem, but also do some think constructive at the same time.
See that? I see that. And you made great points because, you know, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, because this has been a trend that I'm seeing now with even with our clients and prospects of folks utilizing the cloud, whatever cloud provider that you're on, because everyone now is going to be on, whether it's AWS or, you know, Google, GCP or Azure. So I think as we go through, especially with you working in the education and so forth, where with the LLMs, they're getting so much broader and they're controlling the knowledge point. I think more and more do you think it's going to be more imperative to people holding that, having your own kind of hybrids there where you having that data on premises or keeping it and not having it in the cloud? Because now you're hearing a lot of cloud costs go up. And I'm sure from those archetypes that you're dealing with, you're grabbing these data from the users, from the clients. Do you think we're going to move more towards, you know, companies wanting to store that data, you know, whether it's renting it from an on-prem data site or you think it's going to be more secure on the cloud?
I think there are a number of different issues that you've raised. I think that the first one is, and you can see it in how they price the product. You know, the free version of all these products, they promise you no data security whatsoever. If you want them to just merely promise they won't use your data to train their models, you have to pay. And they're just promising that they won't train your models, their models. They're not promising, you know, that it won't leak in some way. I mean, they're just promising they won't use it. So if you get into a situation, which we are, where the novelty of ideas is going to become more and more valuable as things are commoditized, it would be natural for me to think that the best run businesses would start to treat data as an asset to be under lock and key. Okay. The second thing is, as we're starting to see with the costs of server farms and, you know, the buildings that host the servers, they're expensive to run. They cause enormous social problems. I think you may see a greater trend towards companies having their own data centers, you know, just because it'll be easy to finance, be easy to do. So for that reason, I think you might see enterprises start to have their own data lakes. But the problem, though, is that at the moment, the most capable large language models are incredibly computationally expensive to run. Yeah, now, what I think is interesting is, will there be a market for like the Chinese who clearly are building models that are less computationally robust for lots of obvious reasons? But also you look at, you know, Llama and some of the other things. I mean, it's sort of like when I think back to the mini computer revolution. I got my first IBM PC in 1984 and it had a 256K of memory. It had a 640K floppy disk and a monochrome monitor. It was $10,000, right? And you think about the computing capacity in a smartphone now. So I suspect that what we may see is there's an edge case of the pushing LLMs higher and higher competency. But you'll see lighter models come along behind. That'll be satisfactory or suitable for most tasks. So I think that the chances of LLMs becoming more proprietary, more internal, data becoming more internal, is actually a likely outcome of the current movement to put everything into these large language models.
Yep. I think so. I think so, too. And it's going to be fascinating just to kind of see on how the trajectory of where it's going to go and how businesses are now adapting now with, you know, with, of course, Claude bringing out the MCP, the model context protocol. Now they have co-work that can be able to interact with different connectors now with that separate. It's only a matter of time, right, before it gets involved into the side. To your point, John, I'm real curious just on the tool itself within Upside for the creatively, what have you been seeing in terms of what's working best in terms of getting organizations to really understand the archetypes and to help them, you know, improve their employees, their workspace, and help them to enrich that?
Well, what's interesting is when you do a brand new category and a brand new product, you're learning in real time with every week, right? Yeah. We released 1.0 of the product in November. We just released 2.0 last week. So what we're seeing so far is enterprises are using it to begin with to learn about their team. There seems to be a lot of interest. Let me just establish a baseline. Let me just understand my people better. We're seeing that pretty rapidly. The other thing we're seeing pretty rapidly is education institutions are saying, you know, we need a way to understand our students better and their learning competencies in the AI environment. So our earliest customers are falling into those two areas. Where we're starting to see, I think, the beginnings of traction is around change management. You know, because what happens is that people say, wow, I just tried this out on 20 people and it was amazingly accurate. And, but it was also, it exposed things in the spec. So you're starting to think, oh, I could use it for other things. And that's the interesting thing about a platform technology like ours. It's a little bit like Kleenex. You know, you can use Kleenex a lot of different ways, but somebody had to deliver, you know, somebody has to make Kleenex. And in a lot of ways, HubSides, HubCheckers is Kleenex, you know? So that's what we're seeing. I think the other thing we're seeing is, there's definitely some resistance. Some people look at it and be like, well, I mean, I don't need to worry about people. I just need to worry about AI. AI is inevitable. There are clearly people that we've been in contact with or see our product. You're like, I don't need to know anything about my people. I need to know that 2 years from now, I'm not going to have anybody. We actually got feedback from a large Silicon Valley company indirectly through a friend of ours. I'm not going to mention the name. And the response was, we need to understand our people because we're all going to be gone in 2 years. What do you say to that other than, A, you're going to be like everybody else, in which case you're going to lose your competitive advantage. So you're going to end up hiring people. And B, you're probably going to need to keep people because here's a newsflash. Humans like interact with humans when they buy stuff. But, you know, it's an interesting place to be when you're doing something brand new that solves a problem that everybody has, but a large percentage of people don't really know they have the problem yet.
Yeah. And I'm curious on that of just from that example as well. How do you go about with you being the CEO? And obviously you're in talks with, you know, other potential partners, prospects of explaining this original intelligence to help. How do you navigate that, because I'm sure that might be frustrating to that point, to have them to understand to a market that's really obsessed with like automated efficiency?
Well, you know, I think the answer is that you figure out pretty quickly if somebody is in a mindset for one way or another to want to understand the human factors in their environment. And when they do, then they're intrigued. And then what happens is they have to get their heads around, can you really extract this amount of information so easily? And, you know, frankly, the answer is yes. But in some ways, it's really funny. When people think about artificial intelligence, they think about it in a very complex manner. And when you have a product like ours that takes the complexity and actually wraps it into something really simple, there's almost like, this must be black magic. You know, Arthur C. Clarke once said that if you give somebody who doesn't have a lot of technological sophistication something technologically sophisticated, they won't understand it. I think it's magic. And so, you know, this is, I'm sure you have other people you've had in the show, you know this yourself. This is the dilemma of a true new category startup.
It is.
Which is you literally have to establish the category. And the good news is that this is such a big problem now that we're not short of early adopters to support, you know, the acceleration of growth. But honestly, we see this as something that over the next year or two, people are going to start to realize that if everybody's equally efficient, nobody wins. And when that happens, then they're naturally going to say, well, where is the asset that's going to help me make differentiable decisions? That's going to come back to your people. And so really what we're saying is that it used to be that the technology stack was, you know, IT, cybersecurity, right? And the edge, sort of. Yeah. And we can put the cloud in there, right? AI comes along, adds another layer in the technology stack. So it's like, all right, it's AI, cyber, data. Okay. Guess what? There's an originality stack. And that is where humans come in. And all that happens, it's a question of degree. So for example, you want to use a bunch of agents to make your customer support system more efficient. Great. You're still going to have a couple people who are going to figure out how to build it. and build it well. You're still going to have a couple of people answer the phone or even emails when people are pissed off because the chatbot's not doing what it's supposed to do. They're still going to have to be original thinkers. They may be focal, they may be expanders. But if you're in the boardroom, or if you're in the C-suite, or you're a CTO, or you're an architect, or whatever, there's a high level of differentiation from your originality. And that's where we make our money. That's where you make your money. You know, you're taking off-the-shelf stuff. You're putting it together in architecture. You follow me? So once everybody figures that out and the hype cycle ends, because it always does, and then it's going to be like, all right, we just spent $200 billion on this stuff. What do we do with it? Then our supposition is everybody's going to need us.
And I think to the point, I think it drives through of it in anything in business. What I've learned for the few years of kind of being the CEO is that it's always about relationships. It's always the business is always formed around the relationships and building. So for folks that are, you know, now with lead generation or anything for sales and so forth else, your people are focused with, I don't know if you heard, like 11 Labs came out with their V3. Now it's getting to a really good point now where that AI can really talk like very much like a human and so forth else and, you know, have these little moments. But now we have to think of sales. At the end of the day, someone builds that relationship off the sales. Of course, you want the AI to get all of the data, all of anything about the lead to be able to help you close the deal. But to your point, I think now we're looking into, even with HubSide, you're looking at the organizational unit within, if you're looking at higher degrees on enterprise and so forth. So now we're looking at how the AI or how the technology stacks within, or how is it enriching it? How is it enriching the business initiative? Would you say that's fair, or do you have another caveat?
I was getting this earlier. The currency of society is originality. I mean, if you really think about it this way, everybody wants to feel special. Why? Because we value originality. Everybody wants to do something new. Why? Because we value originality. Originality is the currency of society. Seeking novelty and seeking security is the human condition. We're hardwired. So you can see it in how people are reacting to LinkedIn, for example. Why are people complaining about why LinkedIn's become a hellscape of AI-generated content? Why? Because you're not giving me anything valuable. You're just giving me a bunch of crap that you spewed out of chat. But the person who writes two well thought out sentences that can change your world, you read that, you're like, that makes sense, right? So the point is that if you're in business, at the end of the day, if you give somebody the same commoditized stuff they can get for everybody else, you're basically telling them that they're not special to you. You know, my first job, I worked for a Japanese company. That in itself was an amazing experience. I was the only non-Japanese working with a group of bankers in London. And my boss took me out for dinner one night, which was a big honor to do. And he looked at me and he said, Jonathan, what do you think the secret of business is? And I said, well, to make money. And he said, no, let me explain. He said, what do you feel when you see a bonsai tree? And I said, well, I mean, they're kind of interesting. He said, okay, what do you feel when you see a little Mickey dog? And I said, well, it's kind of cute. He says, what do you feel when somebody gives you a document without a typo in it? It's like, I don't know, I'm respected. He said, right. Everybody in the world wants to feel valued. We call that kindness. You want to be kind to people. You want to feel empathetic. Look, Steve Jobs is the most empathetic entrepreneur in the world. Why? Because he figured out how to take a bunch of components and give you something that made you feel special every time you turned it on. And that, to me, is the biggest argument for why once people snap out of it and return to some sense of, okay, it's another tool, what's going to go back to basics, which is relationships, which can be personal relationships, but can also be brand identity, value, service delivery, being there at midnight when somebody calls. Who cares? But what AI is going to enable is it's going to enable you, if you choose, to have a much better consumer experience, because the 9/10 of things that are routine, chatbot can handle, but the 1-10% that really are problematic, there's a human being who's highly trained on the other side of the phone. Hello, Ms. Jabberman. How have you been? I see that you've been a customer for 6 years. You know, you called last week. How can I help? Wow, I love this company.
Yeah, it's
you following me?
No, I'm absolutely. That's 100. And I really love that reference of what your boss said to you, because it really goes back to what you remember it by, that feeling and so forth. So I really, that is a key moment of that. So to that thought, from what you've learned, Jonathan, through your years from that, from the Japanese coming, from being a venture capitalist and now being a CEO, what would you say, if you could solve that major challenge that you're seeing for customers or in this industry regarding AI, the governance and that oversight, like what would it be?
Well, for me, it would be an understanding that human beings are as economically important to a business as AI. And in fact, over time, maybe more important if you actually need to compete on differentiation. So if I could do one thing with this company, it would be to provide the way to level the playing field so that we can have an economic conversation about why human labor is as valuable as AI. That's the most important thing. The other thing I'll tell you is that, and I do this with, and I talk with students and a lot of different contexts. If you take nothing else away from today's podcast, I want you to understand that if you're not using AI, you should. But you should use AI like a really, really dumb assistant with superpowers. And you should drive it like crazy and challenge it and push it and push it. And the more you push it, the more useful it is. But never, ever confuse it for a friend or, you know, an ally. It is just, it's a really, really dumb assistant that you can make do spectacular things. But don't ever put yourself in a subservient relationship with it. Because if you do, then you become irrelevant.
Yep. And absolutely, to your point, it's a tool. And then it comes back of, even just for folks that are utilizing it, it's really having it question you on certain things, of being that, how I kind of call it, like an advisor, like as a peer, to where it's going through sometimes the, of course, we know that hallucinations make, but you give it, how I utilize this, more brainstorm, make me give up different scenarios, as I mentioned in the past, and it helps you to think outside of the box or different caveats or different avenues that you haven't thought of, or maybe for different demographics, or maybe for something that occurred, your features working, what happens if it's a break, or, you know, now with co-work, now it's utilizing with cybersecurity features that are able to like look through your logs and look through it. So now it's getting a little bit better, and it keeps, to your point, Jonathan, it helps to build and be that, you know, that it's not subservient. It should be on peer, utilize that tool effectively based off of your skill set. So this has been great. Like, so I'm curious, as it's kind of, you're going through and it's early stage of how you're continuously evolving with the company and with the creative tool, would you like to see, Jonathan, in the next 6 to 12 months on HubSide and that original intelligence? Do you want to focus more on the education, the government? Like, where do you see the company, like, the success level?
You may see this much more like Kleenex, and everybody's got a cold right now. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do, what we are doing, is we're partnering up with distribution partners in each of those verticals who have the ability to get this out to a lot of customers quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll continue to do that. You know, my stretch goal and what I really want to accomplish with this business is, I would like, whenever somebody's having a conversation at Davos or, you know, Silicon Valley or any of these panels where they get folks in to talk about the deterministic aspects of AI and AI and humans, that either I'm part of those conversations, the company's part of the conversations, or at least the existence of the company is part of the conversations, so that people can acknowledge and understand that humans are an economically valuable part of any successful business model. And if I can, through being on your podcast, other podcasts and other media, if we can make that part of the conversation, then I'll benefit my investors, but I'll also benefit society. And frankly, the people that started this company, all of us didn't need to. We all had other things to do. We do this because we want to make money, but we're also doing this because we think we have an obligation to get this into the public discussion. So, you know, if you see me in a newspaper a year from now, or you see me on TV, then you'll say, you know, he got what he wanted.
Yep.
No, as long as it's not because I've been scandalized in some way.
No, I'd love to kind of have you on like later on, just to see where it is going on, and on the originality and where it's coming from. So, you know, but from that side, Jonathan, like with, I always kind of ask guests that come through, if you had that magic wand with, you know, ChatGPT 14, or whether it's even implied that it's utilizing now their archetypes. What would you want AI to, your dream of AI to do, whether it's in business or in your personal? What would you have it do if you had that magic wand?
I think that AI can become, or could be, the best thing that ever happened to humanity, or the worst. And a lot of it is going to be determined by the economic relationship between the two. And we are at the moment approaching it like it's a deterministic thing, or it's a substitution thing. And I would argue that it could actually be both. So my fondest hope is that 2, 3, 5, 10 years from now, we live in a society where a lot of people are benefiting from it directly and indirectly, that we've adjusted the labor market and we've got education and everything really focusing on people's originality, which will have the benefit, by the way, of promoting authenticity and creativity in ways that have nothing to do with technology. I mean, we could see a resurgence of art, for example, original art, original expression, or we might find that we could use these technologies and be just as efficient. People don't have to work 5 days a week and have more time to consume. We could live in a world of abundance, truly, but not abundance like it's being described by, you know, Elon Musk, but actually abundance that's based upon distribution of opportunity. Because, you know, talk about the first $1 billion company done with one person in AI. It's not impossible, but we have to have a society that will not allow monopolies to constrain that from happening, and a tax system that rewards it, and a social benefit system that makes sure that people who don't have the same level of originality as others don't end up basically eating out of dumpsters. You know, there's a lot to this.
No, yeah, it is. And it's, I think we're seeing, and I love that point that you made, and you hit the nail on the head of it, is because of we're going through, it's giving more of the opportunity. So same thing with how the internet was, now with social media, it's been an abundance for content creators, abundance for YouTube, how it's utilizing for advertisement for companies. So we're seeing these stages of an abundance of people that are, you know, now through TikTok or, you know, whatever is the case. And now they're partnering with Nike. They're the companies are partnering, utilizing them. So now there's multiple avenues of how to leverage. So now this AI is going to be, you know, expanded on all verticals. So to your point, it's going to be really interesting, but it's how we tap into that and keeping. And I really love that archetype, to have it bring on the each person's originality, whether it's business or your personal, to enhance that, to amplify that, to help you grow as that. You know,
that's the fundamental belief, which is that you can use technology or you can be used by it.
Yep. Absolutely.
And we can have a society where people can use technology, but that will require different choices from a technology using us. And, you know, not to be too meta, but that's what's playing out right now in politics and around the world. It's a big struggle and an issue about, well, how elastic do we want a society to be? Going to be really, the next 10 years are, I hope you're strapped in. It's going to be a hell of a ride.
It is. So for folks that are, you know, I really love this conversation, and just, I already knew it was going to be, but it really just seeing it from the arts of, from what you're doing with Upside and bringing that to the market, I think that's so valuable. So for the folks that are listening in that want to, you know, try out the tool, or for organizations that want to kind of tap in or learn your process of, like, on LinkedIn, where can people find you and where can they utilize the tool and see if it's a good fit?
Great news is when your name's Jonathan Aberman, I'm not hard to find on LinkedIn. There's only one other guy on LinkedIn that has any profile. He's a lawyer in Chicago, and I think he hates me whenever he does a vanity search. But I think he's a nice guy too. But you can find me on LinkedIn, you know, on the socials. You can always email me, jonathan@hupside.com. If you're interested in the product, there are a couple of fun ways to learn about it without having to engage with us if you don't want to quite yet. You can go and play the game. There's no IQ challenge. Everybody listening, you can go and spend 5 minutes and play it and get an idea of what your archetype is. It's free. It's always up, and so people can try. There's also a free version of the overall enterprise product with some features not in it, but enough to try it out. You can try it out with up to 10 people. So if you got a group of friends and you want to see, well, you know, what are folks like? You can actually go. It's HubChecker, try the HubChecker. It's right there. Both those are on the site. And then, you know, we're a commercial business, so there are lots of ways to get in touch with us if you want to, you know, do the thing that enterprises do or education institutions do. We sell product too. But this way, folks are free to try it out and they can contact us if they love it.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the folks listening, we'll make sure to have the links down below so they can be able to reach out so we can go in. So everybody else just come down, check out the tool and so forth and see like where you are with and, you know, what that archetype, what that originality is. So on that. So, because I think that's so important in figuring out what you're good at and what that type is. I think that, you know, Jonathan, great. Thanks again for coming on. For the folks listening in, you know, Solinox, we are a technology partner. So we're partnered with Microsoft. So if you need anything else in terms of whether it's in the cloud, looking at implementing AI and really wanting to understand the cost, you know, the now you're having to deal with disaster recovery. If something comes down, you know, you can reach out to us at solinox.net. We really strive and I really push forward that the business leads the technology. So that's what our firm focuses in on. So everyone, thanks for coming in and we'll, Jonathan, thanks again for having and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no-fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at solinox.net.